Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Welcome to the Geek Legacy Podcast, where we talk about everything in the realm of entertainment news, so long as it falls under the geeky umbrella. And we have a lot to talk about today, so we won't waste a whole lot of time. I'm Justin Kavner. With me, as always, Mr. Randy Van Dyke. How are you doing today?
I'm so good.
You look so good. David, how are you doing?
I'm hysterically laughing as you say, we got a lot to talk about, so we're not going to fuck around in the beginning. Great, Justin, we're going to fuck around. That's what we do. You got your request in, and I'm jealous.
That's true. Not too many people have it yet. And in fact, my neighbor, who's arguably closer to the distribution center where it came from, hasn't gotten his yet.
Oh, he ordered one too?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
We all got one.
Hero Quest buddies.
Yeah, I can have a whole army. It'll be fun. Yeah, a little painting party.
I pulled out my old Hero Quest, and so I'm ready. I'm going to pick mine up from Mr. Randy Van Dyke's house tomorrow, and I'm going to bust out my old, I have the expansion pack, like the Witch Lord or the Witch King or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm going to compare old versus new.
There you go. Easy peasy. But yeah, the pieces look great. They feel great. It's a lot. It comes with a lot of action. So I'm very excited to play. Eager little beaver.
Did you buy your Rancor yet, Randy?
I know
you
did
said
not.
You weren't, but you're totally going to.
No, I'm not, because I'm going to not spend copious amounts of money on the Black Series.
Hmm.
I'm just not.
I don't believe it.
Although they did reveal a Ghostbusters 1-to-1 ratio full scale proton pack. Now that kind of tickles me.
It's almost funded too, by the way. It needs 7,000 backers at the time of this recording, which is what's today? Thursday? At 10 o'clock at night, it's at 68.92 backers.
Ooh, it's getting there.
Almost there. 108 to go.
Yeah, I was thinking of the 3D printing a proton pack, but now I can save all that time and effort. Just buy one.
$400.
That's a lot of pooch. Maybe I'll just not do that.
And one of the cables looks broken.
I wonder what stretch goals are going to be for that. Maybe get a ghost trap. Or
I was going to say a trap would be cool.
Yeah.
You get a Ghostbusters 2 mod and a 2016 Ghostbusters mod.
Yeah, they started adding more blinkies on these things.
Yeah. You get the NES Advantage that they use to control the Statue of Liberty in Part 2.
Yeah.
Everyone gets an Ecto-1, like life size.
So, you know, now that I'm looking at it, this thing doesn't look like it includes the Neutrona wand.
What?
So you got the proton? Yeah, you got the proton pack, but you got nothing to fire, to shoot.
Really? That can't be right.
I look at it, dude. Look at the pictures of it. There's the backpack. There is the backpack. There is nothing else. They're not picturing anything else with it.
Interesting. What?
Maybe that's a stretch goal.
they're adding on like fake slime. You can put like really cheesy looking fake slime. That's just like green clear plastic you can just stick on there, but yeah, so that's got to be, it's got to be a stretch goal. How ridiculous is that? It's like selling you a car without wheels.
You think you hate it now, wait till you drive it. Yeah, it's too bad.
That is...
maybe it would be dangerous. Maybe it's a real full functioning atomic pack on your back.
And then we'll all have to activate it in like an elevator, and we all like back away.
Yeah. No, it'd be cool if you got like goggles or a trap. Just kind of spruce that goose. A wand. What makes more sense though? Oh, it says right here. It looks like it has different goals. 9,000 backers to unlock a class 1 unlockable stretch goal with a classic bundle. 11,000 backers. Oh, it just says the Afterlife bundle, 13,000 backers, the Spengler special, and then 15,000 backers, Supernatural Stand, it says. I don't know about all that.
I guess you can choose if you want the Afterlife or 84 Ghostbuster effects. That is interesting.
Well, I'm going to have to see Afterlife first before I can make that choice.
Furthermore, the prompt even has a metal V-hook bracket that connects to the metal V-hook bracket at the bottom of the neutrino wand. The neutrino wand being another HasLab Pulse item you can pre-order here for $125. Sold separately, Randy.
Oh. Yeah.
Dumb. Seems kind of
that dickish. Comes on a stand, too.
They're big on stands. Big on Samaria.
But how does it connect? Does it say that it comes with the connecting piece?
Yeah, it has the metal clip.
Little metal clip that it hooks onto, yeah.
And you go, do, re, Egon.
Egon. Oh, man. Oh, man, that reminds me. So Alex was watching fucking Law & Order SVU, and the credits came on, and I saw, I believe his name is Kurt Fuller. He is like kind of the asshole in Ghostbusters 2 that works with the mayor that wants to get him like committed.
Right.
He's like a bad guy in everything that he does. I was like, Kurt Fuller, isn't that asshole? It's like a bad guy in every movie that he's in.
Every like, single movie.
So then she's like, who is that? And I show her a picture and she's like, oh yeah, he's the defense attorney. I'm like, ah, that lines up.
Yeah, he's a bad guy from Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
And The Running Man. And so many other movies.
Yeah, he's in a lot of action. But anyway, I said we had a lot to talk about, and you are deviating.
I did, and just for the update, the Proton Pack is at 6,900 of 7,000 backers right now.
It already went up another 8?
Yeah, it's 6,892.
Okay, so yeah, it was at... I think that's what I said earlier.
Yeah, 6,892.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you said 62, so I apologize.
Oh. Scared me. We had a moment earlier where we had a dispute on likes on a YouTube video. It was funny. So anyway, moving on. Are you ready? Have you seen this? You heard about this? We got Lightyear. Lightyear. This is the new trailer, and it's this is fun. This is basically a Buzz Lightyear movie, and the idea here is. Of course, we all know, we're all familiar with Toy Story and the character Buzz Lightyear. But this is basically the movie that toy is based off of. So I think that's kind of neat. So the toy, like through merchandising, there was this huge blockbuster film. And then they said, you know what, we should make toys. And that's how we got Buzz Lightyear, the toy. But now we get to see the movie. And it's going to be voiced by one Chris Evans. And I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it looks like a blast. You know, I know there was a lot of people upset that Tim Allen wasn't going to be reprising it, and there were all these rumors that it was because of his conservative nature and this and that. But I like the direction they went, where they're making a serious version of the toy or of the character the toy is based off of. And you know, seeing the trailer shows a lot of like the fun flourishes. You know, like we obviously saw the Buzz Lightyear came in that like box, and it looks just like, you know, a cardboard version of the ship we see in the trailer. And I can't wait. I can't wait for them to make like a trilogy of these and make it, you know, them have like an Empire Strikes Back ending where like Zurg cuts off Buzz Lightyear's hand or something like that. But I'm definitely here for it. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. What about you, Randy?
I think it looks fantastic. I didn't even know this movie was in the pipeline. I wasn't expecting it at all. So it caught me that much further off guard. But it is weird seeing like a Pixar realistic human kind of version looking Buzz Lightyear thing. It just takes a minute to get used to. But I dig the tone of the trailer. It seems like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And one thing I'm really excited is, or one thing that I'm excited about all these like new Disney things is that apart from like the live action remakes, I like these new stories that we're getting of beloved properties. You know, like Cruella is a good example. You know, it's this whole new take on how she became who she is, and it's a lot of fun. Same with like Mandalorian. I think that's really cool. You know, just kind of dipping back into a universe that we really like and a time that we really like, and it's just really cool. And I'm here for it. And I think that this is another example of that. And I'm excited. And, yeah, absolutely. And in a world where we're not getting a remake, we're getting a new story. And I think that's cool.
Yeah, and I like that a lot. I like the reimaginings. You know, like you mentioned Cruella. You know, we all know what a terrible, awful person she is, and now she's going to try to murder puppies and just be awful. But, you know, you're still able to be engaged in, you know, Emma Stone's performance as Cruella. And, you know, I dare say almost sympathize with her for just a minute before you catch yourself thinking, oh, man, she's a dog murderer now. She's she's basically like Michael Vick. I don't care. She can burn in hell.
She wants to take these dogs home and wear them.
Exactly. They can all die a fiery death.
Yeah, that's terrible.
But it is interesting, you know, Pixar, you know, they had their kind of golden era, you know, which I would say was up through like Wall-E and up, you know, and then they kind of really got into like sequel fatigue. You know, we had like Finding Dory, we had the prequel for Monsters, Inc., Monster University. We had, of course, Cars 2, Cars 3, Toy Story 3, Toy Story 4. And so now it was always like kind of like a one for us, one for them type thing, to where they'd have like a new movie. So they'd have Good Dinosaur, but then they'd have an old movie, a sequel in like Cars 3 or something like that. So I really like the idea of them trying to tell, you know, unique stories that aren't being told. You know, like we had like Coco was like about Dia de los Muertos. You know, we have Turning Red coming out, you know, which is going to be, you know, what's kind of a female led, you know, Pixar movie. There's not a lot of those. You know, they have some real fun stuff in the pipeline, so I'm very excited for it.
Yeah.
Luca, 100%. I don't know if you guys saw Luca.
I haven't yet, no.
Yeah, it's kind of a cute tale, and, you know, Onward happened right as the pandemic hit, so, you know, it was in the theater for, like, 2 weeks, and they're like, oh, let's put on Disney+. You know, that's a fun movie with, you know, Tom Holland and Chris Pratt.
I like Moana. That was one of, like, of the more recent ones, like, in the teens of, like, 20-teens, I guess. I think Moana is probably my favorite.
Yeah, that's Disney doing what they do best. You know, they followed up Frozen with even a more singable movie in Moana.
I know. That's a good one. I found a quote from Pixar's chief creative officer about Lightyear saying, at first glance, you might think, well, this is a Toy Story film. Well, it's not so fast, he said. See, back when we created the very first Toy Story, we designed Buzz Lightyear with the idea that he was a toy based on some really cool character from an epic blockbuster film. Well, all these years later, we decided it's time to make that film. That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't consider this a Toy Story movie.
Right.
I would consider it a whole new thing. And I think it'd be great if they can have this space adventure, you know. You know, obviously people are going to say like, make it like Star Wars, but you know, something in that vein to where, you know, it's kind of like this like real action fun event and, you know, basically animated Star Wars.
it almost, I mean, it's not, but in a weird way, it feels like it's kind of like a prequel since we're seeing the origin of Buzz Lightyear and the adventures that he's on. All we know is that Buzz Lightyear was from Star Command and that he was taking on Zurg. And so now we get to kind of see the exploits of his adventures.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what like a real life Zurg will look like. Not a real life, but like, you know, this like version of Zurg.
And, yeah.
You know, they could do some really cool, fun stuff with some of these characters, you know. But yeah, I'm totally in for it. Yeah. In for a penny, in for a pound, as they say.
There you go. I wonder if we'll get a Zurg. What if we get... he's on an adventure and he's helping some other planet or something, but then there's a looming threat of a Zurg. Like maybe it's like one of his minions and then it ends up being Zurg is revealed as the big bad. And then that could be like another movie.
Yeah, I would be down for that.
Yeah. Well, cool. Comes in. When does this movie come out? June of 2022.
Yeah. Can't wait.
We'll see how that works out. All right. Moving on. It's a fun, our favorite director, Christopher Nolan, he's got this new movie coming out called Oppenheimer, see? And it turns out Robert Downey Jr. and Matt Damon are reportedly going to join the film. And this is a movie where it's going to be exploring the development of the atomic bomb. And I believe Cillian Murphy is going to star as Robert Oppenheimer. And we don't really know much about it at this point. It's all very hush-hush. But it's Nolan. We always see Nolan movies. I feel like we always see Nolan movies in theaters. It's one of those you're supposed to kind of things.
The way Nolan intended.
Yeah, exactly. On an iPhone while driving in the backseat of a station wagon facing traffic.
Yeah, I would say out of the 11 Nolan films that had theatrical releases, I have seen 9 of them in the theater.
Yeah, so the only one I guess I haven't... looking back,
I guess there's only 10. I don't think Following ever hit the theater. So of the 10, I have seen 8 of them in the theater.
So I didn't see Memento in the theater. I saw that at home. And I saw Tenet at home. But the rest I either saw with you, Dave. Or, yeah, the rest I saw in theater.
Yeah. So for me, it's, I guess it is Following. So I've seen 9 of the 10 in the theater. The only one that had a theatrical release I didn't see in the theater was Memento.
Yeah.
It had I came late to the Christopher Nolan party, I guess.
Yeah, I had to watch it for like a screenwriting class, and it had already come out, and it was available to rent, but it was still new. I mean, that came out in 2000, right? And then I had to watch it in 2001 or two.
Yeah, I probably saw it like on its first run on DVD or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw it shortly after it came out, and then after that, I watched all his films in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see his movies in theater. They're fun. They're a spectacle, I suppose. But, the last couple I saw with you. Well, minus Tenet. That wasn't our fault, though.
It was not.
But we did see Interstellar and
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk together, yeah. So, there's that. Anyway, the cast is pretty cool. I mean, the cast alone is going to draw me to this movie. I'm excited. And I'm sure it'll be a good time. But later on in the show, we will rank our, I guess, a top 10 of Nolan films. Assuming we have seen 10 films, I believe, Randy, you're at 8.
I'm at 8, yeah.
You have a top 8.
I'm that guy.
Yeah, that's fine.
I have ranked all 11.
I am
a completionist.
That's okay. I did notice that his newer movies are a little bit, like...
Higher?
Higher in the sense of closer to 10, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. I will make no friends of our buddy Vaughn with my list.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He will take great umbrage.
Sure. But it's art, and art is subjective. So
yeah.
Of course, if you have all of us agreeing, then it's probably true.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say out of my bottom 4, I never have to see them again. And my 5th from the bottom, you know, I could give or take.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. You don't want to do that now? We're going to do it at the end?
Yeah, we'll do it at the end. We do lists at the end.
Okay. Well, I thought we did this. We could have another list, but this is your show.
I mean, we can if you want to have another list.
I found another fun list. It was the 11 most shocking Game of Thrones deaths, because we haven't really been talking much about like the new Game of Thrones show, which has got a trailer and all this behind-the-scenes footage stuff. I think we all just kind of got burned out of Game of Thrones. And
it's funny you say that, because I'm rewatching Game of Thrones. I'm on season 3. I just finished the episode 7, which is the Bear and the Maiden Fair or whatever, that episode.
Oh. Which means you're only 2 episodes from Reigns of Castamere.
That's correct. I'm rock and rolling. I've been watching almost a season a day.
Yikes. It's like Game of Thrones.
I know. I have it on in the background. But there's so many like things that like it's I'm curious to rewatch the last season. So this is my first rewatch since the end of the show. But I think all of us watched it as it was airing. So it was fun to kind of see all this stuff play out. But there are a lot of callbacks to this show that as you watch it, as you're binging, it's very rewarding. Whereas if you're watching it and you got to wait a year in between seasons, if you don't redo a quick rewatch before the new season, you might miss a couple of things. And that's coming from someone that, you know, read the books. But it is fun to see how they will mention something just in casual conversation that I know for a fact comes up later. It's really funny. One of which was the bells. And when Varys and Tyrion are just chatting in the battle over Blackwater at the beginning of the episode, basically. And the bells start ringing, and they're like, oh, man, I fucking hate the bells. It's always something bad. It's never anything good. And I'm like, well, you are correct.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, they name an episode after them bells, and it's a hardcore, barbecue. Most hated
episode probably ever.
It is. Dude, it is like a 4 on IMDb.
Really?
The finale is a 4. The last season, it's interesting because as you go through the seasons, there's a lot of 8s and a lot of 9s. The first 9.9 episode is The Reigns of Castamere. And I think the Blackwater one was like a 9.7. But 9.9 was season 3, episode 9. But there's a lot of 9.9. I think there's like four or five 9.9 episodes.
Yeah,
but,
you got Hardhome and Battle of the Bastards. Hardhome's
definitely one. And the one where everyone, where Cersei blows everybody up.
Yeah,
that episode.
It's funny. I saw it like a clip on like TikTok, and I'm like, man, I got to rewatch Game of Thrones. But I was worried, like, was the first season easy to get through? Because like it was definitely a different show.
It is. It is a different show, but it's set, it puts a lot of pieces in play, and there's a lot of varies in Littlefinger, which I find very rewarding. I'm totally cool with it. I remember season two being a bit of a slog, but I actually enjoyed it this time. It's been a lot of fun. I'm excited that I'm doing it too. Yeah, it's been a joy, an absolute joy.
Since you're so excited, do you want to hear the 11 most shocking deaths in Game of Thrones according to Collider.com?
Sure.
You don't have to. You could say no.
No, I do. Do you want to do that at the end, or do you want to do that right now?
Doesn't matter.
We can do it right now. Let's do it.
Sure. So number 11, and remember, this is the most shocking deaths that kind of caught you off guard. Number 11 is one I think we all wanted to happen right from the first moment we saw him. It was Viserys Targaryen in episode 1, season 1, episode 6, The Golden Crown, where freaking Drogo just puts melted gold on his head. That was both shocking and cool, I thought.
Yeah, they break his arm first, they can hold him. And then they pour the gold on him, and then
he throws his belt in like the fire, in the pot in the fire. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Number 10 was Peter Baelish, aka Littlefinger, in season 7, episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf. Arya executes him.
Yeah, I thought he was gonna make it to the end. I thought that we were literally gonna end the show with him and Varys having just another conversation in front of the Iron Throne. I really thought that was gonna be sort of the last little. Them walking off into the sunset, still plotting and doing what it is that they do.
Yeah, I thought for sure he was going to talk his way out of it. And then, guess not. Number 9 is Joffrey Baratheon, season 4, episode 2, The Lion and the Rose.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody sad he's dead.
It is cool that they didn't waste any time with that. Because, you know, Joffrey and Rob die in the same book, but different seasons on the show.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to... see that they were not going to waste any time, and that be like the 9th episode of season 4, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, number 8 is The People of King's Landing, season 8, episode 5, The Bells. I think this was kind of the turning point. I think everyone was teetering on the precipice of, is this season 8 going to stick the landing or fail us? And I think once this happened, I think we all realized that we were not going to be happy with how this show ended.
Yeah.
Hopefully Martin will rebound.
We'll see.
And change things up. Apparently not if he's writing Elden Ring and doing all this other stuff. Still got 2 books to go. Number 7 was Marjorie Tyrell and everybody else in season 6, episode 10, The Winds of Winter.
And the rest.
And the rest. When
that's the name of the episode, Winds of Winter, the name of the next book.
Yeah, when Cersei just lays waste to everybody, and it's incredible.
And then her youngest jumps out the window. Tommen. Just hops out the window.
Yeah, I like this episode because it's like Cersei's like Darth Vader moment. Like she just finally embraces, like, yeah, I'm the bitch. I'm the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. I'm just glad that stupid Pycelle is finally done. I hated that guy.
Yeah. And it was fun that it was like Lancel Lannister, who was trying to like save the day, and he couldn't reach it in time before the wildfire exploded.
Yeah.
Sorry. Number 6 is Tywin Lannister, season 4, episode 10, The Children. This is, of course, when Tyrion murders his own father. In the privy, as they call it. Yeah. For you and me.
Yeah.
Number 5 for you Mandalorian fans, Oberyn Martell, season 4, episode 8, The Mount and the Viper. He had him won, he had to gloat, and then bad things happened.
Yeah, he's like, say her name!
Yeah, and then he crushed his head.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Number 4 is Hodor from season 6, episode 5, The Door, died saving his liege.
Yeah, that was weird too, because it had the whole non-linear thing where...
Hold the door.
Yeah, where it's the future happens, and then what happens in the future has an impact on the past. It was really weird. That was interesting. That was some Star Trek space-time continuum shit.
Now, number 3 almost made me want to stop watching Game of Thrones. Like, I remember it just really, really upsetting me. Number three is Shireen Baratheon, season 5, episode 9, The Dance of Dragons, when Stannis burns his own daughter at the stake.
Yeah, that was hardcore, man.
Yeah.
I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, and I remember it ended, and like it was like total silence. Like, there was like no music or anything on, and I was like, oh man, this shit's for real.
Yeah.
And I think everyone could predict 2 and 1. It's just the order in which they are. Number two is Eddard Stark, season 1, episode 9, Baelor, where what we thought was going to be the star of this show for a long time gets his head cut off.
Yeah. It's like, but in true Sean Bean fashion, he's not going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, this is the only spoiler that I actually remembered, because I remember you and Randy had seen the season before I did, and we were going down to Comic-Con, and you were like, you might have talked about spoilers. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to remember anything. Like, man, I can't believe that Boromir gets killed. And I'm like, well, that's the only one I know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And, of course, number one has to be Robb Stark, Catelyn Stark, Talisa Stark, Grey Wind, season 3, episode 9, The Reigns of Castamere, the Red Wedding I was so excited to see, because I had read it in the book, and I hate the Starks. But I remember the episode, I'm like, this is the episode that's going to happen. And as it progressed, I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to see this. It's going to be pretty hardcore. And then, of course, when it happened, I was very, very sad with how it all went down.
I think adding his wife to the equation, especially since she was pregnant, that made it a little bit more hardcore. You know, because that she's a character that's not in the book. He marries some other chick. You know, some daughter of a defeated lord. Yeah. I think it might be like Jenna or something. I don't remember. But
she's very much alive in the books.
Yeah, she doesn't go to this wedding. And her mom was even giving her some kind of poison to where, like a plan B, basically, so she never got pregnant. And
yeah, milk of the poppy, I think is what they would call it.
It got a little dicey there. And so, yeah, I mean, same thing. Having known what happened, but seeing it was pretty hardcore. Even to the effect where they kill Grey Wind and then put his and chop off Rob's head and then put his head, the wolf head, on Rob's body, you know, that like, right. Sew it on. Like, I remember reading that thinking, fuck, that's graphic.
Right.
And then when you see it on the show, he's got, you know, like this wood, he's on the horse, he's strapped to the horse. There's like this wood beam behind him that's supporting the wolf's head, and it's jarring, man. It's hardcore. And then when Arya sees it, you're just like, whoa, that's too much too fast. Right, you're
like, that is very unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember when they killed Talisa, they don't even really try to kill her. They just like stab her in the gut to kill the baby like a million times, and like she just bleeds out. But they never actually like slit her throat or do anything bad to her. They just stab her in the gut like a million times, and it's like, well, you know, she will die, but it's like they didn't really care about her. They just wanted to make sure that baby died.
Yeah, and that whole chapter's hardcore too, because it's told through Catelyn Stark, right? Mm-hmm. And she's having like a mental breakdown while it's happening, and you know, her hair's getting pulled and cut, and she's like, no, you know, Ed always loved my hair, my beautiful red hair. And then she's even there like, what's wrong with her? She's like having a freak out. So it's just really sad. Everything about it's sad.
Yeah, because she recognizes that Roose Bolton has his like armor on.
Why
you got your chainmail on there? And then they kill all their army and everything. I'm like, well, a lot of people just died. Yeah. All because you didn't marry one of the Frey women.
Right. I mean, and because his mom let Jaime Lannister go. You know, that started a lot of it. You know, like his army abandons him. You know, she's a traitor, and he doesn't punish her. Rob doesn't punish her. And then, you know, Karstarks get killed, and then the army just up and leaves. And it's like, fuck this shit. So, I mean, yes, absolutely. He needed to marry the Frey girl, and it sucks that he didn't, because he probably would have won the war if he had.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda. That's why you don't fuck with the Lannisters.
Or the phrase, for that matter. But they're even like frowned upon in the whole rest of the realm after that. They're like, dude, you can't kill somebody after you break bread. Yeah, that's just bad business. No one's ever going to trust them ever again.
Right, because even Catelyn, on the way to the phrase, to the river, she's like, second you get there, eat food.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't do shit once you eat food.
Yeah, you're under house protection.
Yeah. And he broke that, and then Arya made him pay for it many, many seasons later.
Yeah, fast forward.
It was rad when she murdered the Freys. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like the next scene, too. Like, she leaves, where is the name of that town?
The Freys are in...
No, the Freys are at the Twins in the Riverlands, but she is on... She's on Essos, and then she packs up her shit. I just forget the name of the town.
It starts with a B.
Bravos.
There you go.
Yeah, because there's the... Her first trainer did the Bravos water dance or whatever. Yeah, so she leaves there, and then all of a sudden, bam, she's at the Twins. That's when they hit the fast-forward button a lot. They just started making everybody move and teleport and just...
Yeah, everyone teleported. It's going to take 8 days, 8 months to get there. Now we're there already.
Yeah, they don't waste any time.
And we were here for it. Like, yeah, season's like 6 and 7, like, hum.
Yeah.
And then, because season 7, that's when Daenerys finally gets to Westeros.
Yeah, she goes to Dragonstone.
Yeah, and then from that point on, it's like, all right, here it comes. It's the Lannisters, like, well, what are we going to do against these dragons? She's got 3 of them.
Yeah, I like that one meme where it's like Cersei laughing at Daenerys. She's like, I thought you had 3 dragons after one got killed, and then she's laughing hysterically. She's like, I thought you had 3 kids. It's kind of fucked up.
Poor kids.
That's a fun list. I can appreciate it. As someone that is currently rewatching, I can appreciate it.
It made me think of you. Sweet. And it made me think that, like, yeah, we're not talking about Fire and Blood at all, but I think it comes out next year, 2022.
No.
Yeah. They got a trailer and everything. They've been showing, and they've been doing all these like prequel, like 15-minute videos on like all the different houses that are going to be in the series. Like, I watched one of the Lannisters, and it like told the whole story of the Lannisters, and like Tywin's father was like a weak lord, and like he let everyone like just take money and never pay it back, and he became like a joke of a lord, and no one was respecting the Lannisters, and so Tywin took an army. And he found the person who owed him the most money and basically, like, brutally fucking murdered him, his entire family, and, like, basically wiped this house off the face of the map. And then all of a sudden, everyone started respecting the Lannisters again. And they started paying all their debts, and Tywin just took over as the king.
And what is this one? What is this series called?
Fire and Blood, or Blood and Fire. I think it's Fire and Blood.
That's the new one that's coming out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2022. It takes place.
What's the House of Dragon? I thought that's 1,000 years or something.
No, so this one's going to follow Aegon the Conqueror as during his rule in Westeros, and so it's going to be the Targaryens at the height of their power.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago, right?
It's like 300 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, I thought you said Tywin's dad.
Well, I was talking about like they had like this whole history on to promote it. They did like a history on all of the houses that are going to be involved in this. And it's before Tywin's dad. But, so they talk about the formation of Lannisters and how they found, the gold under the Castamires, which is where another house was. And they kind of took the gold from them. And basically when the Castamires wanted to get their money back, the Lannisters showed up at their front gate with like a whole army. And so what they did is they retreated into these mines because they knew that no one could fight them in the mines. And instead of fighting them, what the Lannisters did is they diverted like a local river or a nearby river. They diverted it into the mines. And so everyone down there drowned.
Got it. Okay.
And so Lannisters, they're good peeps.
Right.
They always pay their debts.
Rains of Castamere is their song.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing is that, the water was raining down on them. Right. That's where this song came from.
Right, right, right. So this prequel show is set 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones.
Oh, sorry. I said 300.
I know. I said a little. Yeah, no, you were close. I thought it was 1,000. I thought it was going to be even further to where we wouldn't recognize anything. I guess 200 years is plenty of time, but I think you could get away with more magical shit in a further back time. Like the idea of like Bran the Builder,
we're
going to build this wall.
Fire and Blood was the book. The name of the show is called House of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
House of the Dragon. And it comes out next year.
Right. Cool. All right. I'm here for it.
I'm glad you are.
We'll see how that plays out. I mean, I thought I was all Game of Thrones out, but just looking for something to watch on HBO Max, I was like, I think it's time. and it certainly is, because I'm plowing through it like a madman, dude.
Yeah, I mean, enough times passed, you know, to where you start to remember, like, the good episodes, like we mentioned, like Battle of the Bastard and Hardhome and Battle of the Blackwater. You start remembering those episodes, and you start forgetting episodes like, you know, season 8, where they make Bran the king.
Right. Yeah, that was bad news. I don't like that. The it just seems so weird. He's such a nothing character on the show, anyway. In the book, I always enjoyed his chapters, but on the show, I thought he was such a snooze fest. But you're right. There are a lot of really good episodes, and even like the quote unquote filler episodes, I feel like really drive the story a little bit further, so that they don't really necessarily count as filler. It's more of, you know, the scheming. There's a lot of scheming on this show, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, I love Varys. I love Littlefinger.
I was really mad when Varys died, dude. I thought that was so lame. I was like, are you kidding me? This guy cares more about the realm than anybody else on the show. I thought that was so fucked up. I was like,
one of the things that I thought really translated well from the book to the show was when Jon Snow executes Janna Slynt.
Yes.
Where Janna Slynt's just like being a dick. And he's like, this is your last warning. And then he just drags him out. And he's like, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. He's like, all right. And it cuts his fucking head off.
Yeah. And that other guy too, what's his name? Like Alabaster or something. Yeah.
Alabaster Black.
Yeah. It might be Alistair. I might have added the B. Yeah.
I think it's Alistair Black.
He's a real asshole too. I was glad when that, and he, I think he got hung.
Yeah.
He was part of the killing. Yeah. He was part of the killing of Jon Snow. Yeah.
Yeah. He hangs Ollie the kid. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. No mercy for anybody.
I'm glad you
for
did.
The watch.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving on. Thank you for that list. It was a lot of fun. Zack Snyder, your buddy, whom you named all your World of Warcraft characters after. Zack Snyder has a new sci-fi movie that's going to be on Netflix, and it has casted Sofia Boutella, who you might know as the nice lady with the crazy blade legs in Kingsman, and she was also the French spy in Atomic Blonde. She's awesome. She's a lot of... I like this lady and everything she brings to the table. She is going to be the lead role, and it's basically going to be sort of a Seven Samurai story in space. There was news of when Snyder pitched a Star Wars movie that was similar. They told him no, pound sand, and it was going to be set after Return of the Jedi, so he's like, fine, I'll make my own movie. And this was taken from the concept of that. So what is left of it, I do not know. I doubt any of us will. But it's a thing. It's happening. It's going to be on Netflix. And they got a fun lead for it. So we'll see how it goes. And it is going to be the same writers as Army of the Dead, too, by the way.
That's fun.
Yeah. I know Randy liked that more than most of us.
Well, I thought it was an interesting take on a zombie film.
Sure. Interesting camera choices.
Interesting lens choice specifically, yeah.
Yeah, that's it, lens choices.
Yes.
You'll be happy to know that all my current World of Warcraft character is Mad Dog Tannen.
Oh, nice.
I mean, he's a human, and I tried my best to make him look as much like Mad Dog Tannen as I could.
There you go. I'm here for it. So I thought that was worth sharing. I know that we are all sci-fi fans, and we're all... I couldn't even see a smile on my face was as I was trying to say we're all Zack Snyder fans, but I can't say it with a straight face. But I do like some of his movies, so I'll check it out. I'll give it a whirl, as Randy would say, quoting Home Alone. But yeah.
As Kevin McAllister would say.
Yeah. moving on. Boondock Saints. It's getting a third film with the original cast and director, one Troy Duffy, and of course Norman Reedus, and then Randy's boy Sean Patrick Flannery, who you might know from fucking Young Indiana Jones.
Now airing on Paramount Plus, or now streaming, I should say.
There you go. I don't think the world needs this movie, but whatever. I enjoy the first one for what it is. I think it's fun. I know a lot of people say it's overrated and it's garbage, but I actually enjoy the first Boondock Saints movie. I think it's a lot of fun. In a post-Pulp Fiction era where every movie is compared to Pulp Fiction, just want to try to be different. And I actually enjoy the Boondock Saints. But the second one I thought was terrible. The third one I'll watch just because I like talking to him and watching movies.
I like that Troy Duffy has 4 credits to his name as a director, and 3 of them are now Boondock Saints movies.
Yeah, he's apparently he's a hard man to work with. There's a lot of stories out there of him just being extremely dickish and hard to work with. I don't know if that's true, but if you can't spot the sucker in the room.
I can appreciate the first Boondock Saints. You know, I don't think it's like the end all be all like a lot of people do, but you know, I think the second one's pretty meh. And I don't besmirch anyone who wants to make a movie or see a movie or enjoy a movie. Sure. But for me, it's not on the list of properties. I'm like, you know what movie needs to come back? We need a Boondocks.
Right. Well, I think what's cool about it is it was a word of mouth movie. You know, it didn't get to shine in theaters. It was a release that was around Columbine, and violence in film was frowned upon at that weekend and that time period, and it didn't really get a chance. And this was a movie pre-social media that spread like wildfire, as it were. And it was one of those movies where someone said, hey, have you seen Boondock Saints? And you're like, no, I haven't. Dude, let's go to a fucking video store and rent this movie so you can watch it right now. So, I mean, it had a lot of word-of-mouth power. And now that's done through things like Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that. And so to be able to be so successful and be in so many homes and viewed by so many people, I think is a pretty big deal and worth the conversation.
Randy, yeah, it got a lot of praise for being that, like, post-Columbine. Like, it was canceled because of Columbine. And so everyone was like, oh, I got to watch this movie. They had to censor it, blah blah blah. So, so I think it lent itself to a certain sect of the population automatically.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't. It took me a little while before actually even seeing the first one, so I was kind of late to the party on it. And I enjoyed it, and I thought it was cool. And you know, as you mentioned earlier, my boy Sean Patrick Flannery is in it, and I like to support anything that he does. But I wasn't really all that into the first movie. I thought it was kind of cool. There's some cool quotable moments in there. But I only saw the second one once, and I remember not really being into it at all. And now I'm sitting here wondering, did we need a third one? I mean, maybe.
I'm willing to give a shot.
Gotta feed the monkey. I like Norman Reedus too, so why not?
Sure, yeah. Are you still watching Walking Dead or no?
Fuck, I am. Yes.
You're gonna get a badge when it's over. I want you to know that. There's a plaque, a watch, a shirt, all kinds of stuff for you when it's over.
So let me tell you, I should get triple because I'm watching all 3 of the Walking Dead series right now. The original Walking Dead. Walking Dead Extra Crispy, Walking Dead Original Fucking Recipe. I'm watching all of them.
So what's the one that says Fear the Walking Dead?
So there's Fear the Walking Dead and then The World Beyond.
I don't even know what that is.
So that one is it's a relatively new show, and I want to say it's only in its second season. Uh-huh. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I want to say it's only in season 2, but it's also its final season. So it is a very short-lived one, and it's following a group of kids. Or not like, kids, like
children?
Teenage, early 20s, something like that.
Got it.
Yeah, so it's kind of for the younger group. And it's it's not necessarily as, I don't want to say it's necessarily as dystopian as the other ones, because this particular group of kids has found like this huge civilization and government with, you know, an acting government in place, and they've got like helicopters and schools and just like normal society within their walls. So you know, there are moments where it just doesn't even feel like you're in The Walking Dead at all. It just feels fucking normal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the interesting thing that's playing. But of the 3 series right now, I would say Fear the Walking Dead has the most interesting storyline and the most interesting characters that I'm engaging with right now of the 3 that are running actively. And that's the one that was the spinoff from the first Walking Dead.
Right. Are any of the original characters still on the show?
Almost all of them have been killed off. Like the entire family that you couldn't stand, all fucking dead, except for the sister, but she's not in it much. She's like somewhere doing something.
So the mom, the dad, and the son.
Mom, the dad, and the son are dead. The sister, the one that was like pretty tolerable, is around. The dude whose boat they got on, Victor Strand, if you remember that that name, he's still around. Morgan Jones from the main Walking Dead series found his way over onto this series
because he left. Was it done like because he went on the Fear the Walking Dead? Is it like before the events of where it is now on the Walking Dead kind of thing? Like, are the timelines together, or is now, like, do they ever catch up with each other? Because we were obviously several seasons in before Fear the Walking Dead started, and that began with the outbreak, right? So if Morgan were to go to Fear the Walking Dead, does it, events that took place, is he already a badass? Is he,
he's already he badass.
Bow staff and knowing the kendo shit?
They find him, like, basically wandering down the road with his bow staff.
Okay, so he
literally left one show and walked right onto the other as if like very little time had passed.
Okay, so he's in a post Negan world on Fear the Walking Dead.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Although Negan is still very alive and well in the flagship Walking
Dead. Right. And that's all fine and dandy. It's just this Morgan has met and dealt with fallout from Negan.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. So that at some point the two shows collide and catch up with each other.
Well, I don't know if they're ever going to cross over any more than they already have, and that one crossover would literally be the one character. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean. Just because they were on different timelines at some point, because one's already gone forward and the other, and it's six seasons behind or whatever by the time Fear the Walking Dead started. Okay. Cool. All right. Well, we'll see how Boondock Saints 3 turns out, assuming they finish it. Apparently, Troy Duffy and Norman Reedus tried working on this before, and they had to part ways because of creative differences. So we'll see how it all pans out.
Yeah, as I'm watching while you guys were talking about Walking Dead, and I'm like, yeah, maybe pull Randy and just completely zone out for a couple minutes. I was reading all about the Troy Duffy's fall from grace and this and that, so... It is definitely an interesting cautionary tale for any young filmmaker out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a documentary that was released on him.
Yeah. It's called Overnights.
Yeah.
And it's, it does not portray him in a good light. You know, I guess Miramax bought Boondock Saints, bought the script off him for $300,000 and was going to make it for $15 million. And then I guess during pre-production, he was, we'll just say, difficult to work with. It's probably the most politically correct way to say it.
Yeah, I think he got in a fight with somebody, right? Didn't he punch like Kurt Russell or something? I don't know, some weird story.
And so Miramax told him, you know, this deal's off the table. It's parted ways. And they had to find a like an indie film company to make it for him.
Yeah.
More indie than Miramax.
And he was like a bouncer or something? I forget what his...
Yeah, so he was a bouncer and he was part of a band. And so he came to Los Angeles to like... his band's called like The Brood or something. He came to Los Angeles for his music. And the way he tells the story is, as he was coming home one night, someone was wheeling a dead hooker out of the apartment across from him in like a wheelbarrow, like to like get rid of the body or something like that.
Shit.
And that was the impetus for him to sit down. He rented a computer because he didn't own one, and he wrote Boondock Saints, and the rest is history.
Wow.
And he's one of the few people who have actively been blackballed in Hollywood, where it's not a secret, which is the reason that the only three films he's ever directed are Boondock Saints, and he hasn't directed the third one yet, so we'll see.
Yeah, I remember he was working on some. So Tortuga and I went and watched Boondock Saints like 10 years later. It was like one of those Fathom event type things where it's like a one night only in theaters, right? Like how we're going to do for Rocky 4, Sly Cut. And there was an interview with Troy Duffy before the movie played, and he was talking about this new movie that he was working on, and I forget what it was called, but it's something like King's Court. I don't know. Or the Fish King, the Frog King. I don't know. Some kind of king. And I don't think it ever got made. If you're telling me that he's only made three movies and they're all three
Yep. Yeah, he's directed Boondock Saints 1, Boondock Saints 2, and the upcoming Boondock Saints 3. His other director credit is that he was attached to a TV series called Luminous, but it just says attached, so I don't know if he ever actually worked on it.
Oh, interesting.
He was a writer on the 2016 short for The Knight Rider.
Oh, good for him.
So he's got that going for him.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how he's making a living. Is he still able to...
I don't know. According to the internet, his net worth is $22 million. I mean, Boondock Saints, the first one, is a, you know, one of those cult films that, you know, they probably sold a trillion... Yeah, the movie made made no money at the box office. No one got paid for the box office. But, you know, I'm sure on DVD it became one of those, like, juggernauts.
Yeah, but just... I mean, as someone that knows people that have made movies that aren't making a lot of money in return, I'm just curious how he is able to stay afloat with this one. Just have a hell of a distribution deal, I guess.
Yeah. He's worth $22 million, according to the internet.
Wow. Good for him.
All right. Sure.
Yeah. Well, Boondock Saints 3. All more Saints Day. I don't even know. Oh, that's what it was going to be. The whole idea with this movie was that they're going to stay away from just killing like Boston Mafia guys and deal with corrupt politicians. I don't know if it's a empty the swamp kind of politician or if it's a what side they're going to choose. I'm curious to see how this plays out. But it should be interesting. I hope it's interesting. Right? I mean, because the Saints are, they take care of bad guys. People that hurt people, that's who they go after. So I am curious to see how this plays out. And it's in this world, in this Saints world, the public is aware of their activities and their exploits, right? So like the first one ended with the newscasters basically interviewing people like, hey, what are your thoughts on the Saints? And some people are, it's very much down the line. Some people are like, yeah, I love it. You know, kill all the bad guys. And then other people are like, oh, fuck the Saints. Who are they to be, you know, Judge Judy executioner? And so it was interesting to know that they do exist in this world and there's fallout from it. You know, there's a public opinion of their activities.
You need that PR agency.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it for me. We do have, I wanted to rank our favorite Christopher Nolan films, if you guys want to do that. I think that would be fun.
Of course.
Do you want to start at number 10?
One of us starts at, one of us starts at like 11, and then if it's on someone else's list, they can kind of say where it is on the list, or do you want us just to all three to rapid fire go through our list?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. We'll do it the way you just said. Start at 11. Because you've seen all, and I have not seen the following. Is that what it's called?
Yes, which is that is my 11th Christopher Nolan film. It's very much like a student film. It's, you know, it's fine. I'm glad I watched it once just to kind of get a glimpse at what Christopher Nolan's first attempt at a feature film was. But you know, it's basically about a writer who follows a bunch of strangers around to get ideas for stories. You know, interacts with a thief and then kind of gets sucked into that thief's world. It seems very autobiographical for Christopher Nolan. So, since that's on, neither of you have seen that, it's not on your list. My number 10 is Tenet.
Oh,
I was bored to death. I don't think there's anything creative about time inversion, and I think that it's so needlessly complicated that it's not even fun for me to watch. Like, some things can just be things. They don't have to be, like, super explained. Like, I don't need to be explained that in the reverse world, when you get burned, you freeze, and this and that.
Right.
I just don't care. And it was never actually explained very well. Like, the first couple times you see the inversion, you know, the twists are pretty easy to see a million miles away. And I don't know. Maybe I was having a bad time. But Tenet was my first film I saw in COVID. So.
Okay. So Tenet's also my number 10, and I watched it with Josh at home though. I didn't see it in the theater, and Josh was watching me watch the movie, which I thought was really funny. But yeah, I mean, just like trains going by, the music being really fucking loud. Like, we've talked about sound mixing before, and it's so weird when there's this choice to just have shit be so goddamn loud you can't hear what people are saying. I don't get it. I don't understand. Especially if I feel like my soundbar does a really good job of sort of fixing that problem and giving a theatrical experience where I would otherwise hear the dialogue. But that movie was still kind of tricky because there'd be like a boat going by going, as people are talking, so you have no idea what they're saying. There'd be trains going by, whatever, bullets firing. And so that kind of annoyed me. As somewhere down the line, Nolan has decided that he doesn't want his audience to hear a fucking word that people are saying on screen. And it drives me insane. So that is why it's number 10 for me on my list.
Well, I don't have a number 10, so feel free to skip me.
Did you have Tenet on your list? Have you seen that movie?
Tenet's number 4 on my list.
Okay. Ooh, yeah, that's perfect. Okay. You like that one.
I actually enjoyed it. I had a good time. I didn't see it in the theater, so I had the home viewing experience for that one. But something about it, I mean, I always like movies with some element of time travel or some element of messing around with time. I should say always, but not always. I shouldn't say always. Because Interstellar also played with time, and it is way the fuck down on my list. But I don't know. Something about Tenet got me. I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. I only saw it once, but, you know, and it doesn't necessarily warrant ever seeing again, but I enjoyed it the one time I saw it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned Interstellar, because that is my number 9 Christopher Nolan movie is Interstellar. Oh, wow. Again, it was just, I like when they're on that water planet. There are some moments that I like, so, but yeah, at its whole, I think it's probably 45 minutes too long. And I don't think he does a good job of articulating the message. I also don't like the idea of this whole movie being about reuniting with your kid. And then you're like, oh, you're here. Well, I gotta go do my own thing. Now I gotta go find Catwoman. So, we'll talk later.
Yeah. There you go. I was going to say, I have Interstellar as 6 on my list.
Okay.
Number 8 on mine.
The bottom. You only have a top 8. Interstellar right. is yeah. the bottom. All right.
Yeah. That's saying something.
All right.
And well, I've watched Interstellar 1,000 times. I feel like I watch it like 2 or 3 times a year. I've done multiple podcasts on it. I've had the discussion. I've given this movie so many chances. I want to like it. I there's some cool visuals which definitely ranks it in higher, and there are some cool moments. Like I do like when he comes back from the water planet and so much time has passed and he's just having to see that he's basically lost out on 20 years of his kids' lives, and that's just gut-wrenching. There are some really cool things that I like about it. But I just, at the end of the day, it just bothers me.
Right.
Yeah.
My number 8 film from Christopher Nolan is Dunkirk, the World War I film. Was it World War II?
Okay. World War II, yeah.
This was the first movie that really, really showed me, you know, that Christopher Nolan, for all his, you know, his elevation as an auteur, and like the complete filmmaker, this is the one that really, really showed me that he didn't give a fuck about sound. And you know, it's interesting because there's so much emphasis put on sound with like the ticking, you know, with the sound effects, with the score, but his inability to embrace ADR just seems like a very weird flex for such a prolific filmmaker. You know, it's such. For a big budget film like something he's going to make, a $250-$300 million film, it is such an easy thing to do, especially in Dunkirk, because most of the ADR was Tom Hardy, and he's got a mask over his face half the time. It would have been the easiest thing in the world, and I can't tell you a thing that Tom Hardy says in that film.
I think the microphone was mounted to the propellers on his plane,
just spinning around.
Yeah, we saw that together. So I have Dunkirk as 8. Is that what you said? 8 as well?
Yep. 8.
Okay, yeah. So I have that at 8. I really like just the. I think it conveys this message of what people will do to survive. You know, I really like the spy in the group. I like how people were scared. You know, there was a lot of really like horrifying moments where, you know, people were going to die. They were going to drown or get shot, or things like that. And I thought it really captured that aspect of war really, really well. These people are down to the last moments on this planet, and I was genuinely concerned and scared for them. And there was a lot to like about the movie, but I thought it was just shot in a way. I remember you had a comment like it was. What did you say? Where it was like it was the most directed movie. Or something.
Yeah. It was the most directory movie ever directed by a director.
That's what it was. It somehow made sense to me, to where Nolan is like, I'm Christopher Nolan. You know, I'm going to make this movie like this, and it felt like that sometimes. You know, very pretentious. I guess it might be a good word for it. When I don't think it needed to be that way. I think it lost something.
Where is it for you, Randy?
It's number 7 for me.
Okay, so we're close.
Yeah.
8 and 7. Perfect.
Yeah, my number 7 movie is The Dark Knight Rises. I remember being so excited for this movie. And it's like one of the few times that I think my enthusiasm actually caught the better of my wife. And like, so she like took the day off work, and she like had me take the day off work, and we went to like a 10 a.m. showing, and like plan to have like lunch afterwards, and we're going to make a day of it. And I remember leaving the theater, and I'm like, I don't think I like that movie.
That's funny. Dark Knight Rises for me was number 9. That was my number 9.
Number 6 for me.
Out of 8.
Out of 8.
Yeah, so we're all kind of in the same ballpark still.
Yeah. Yeah. My bottom 3 have already been discussed here.
Nice. Well, my number 6 movie is Insomnia.
Oh, yeah. See, I like that one. I have that as number 4. I enjoy it. I've seen it a couple of times. When I saw it in the theater, I watched it. I was a long gap, about 10-year gap before I rewatched it, and then I watched it again when HBO Max came out because it was on that. And I enjoy that movie, man. It's pretty dark. And I mean, I say dark, but obviously it's 24-hour daylight. But I mean, just the subject matter is really dark. You know, like this teenage murder. And it was weird seeing Robin Williams be a bad guy. Of course, he was a bad guy in One Hour Photo as well. Photo, yeah. So he kind of had this trend for a little bit with a couple of movies that were just kind of just different, you know? And so it was really cool to see two actors that I have known my entire life to be, you know, just, you know, adult actors that have always been successful in film, but never really make a movie together. So it was cool to see Pacino and Robin Williams together. And I really just like the sort of the detective storyline. And the guy that's trying to solve the murder is not a good man. You know, he's done bad things. He's a very gray area police officer. And I think even watching it under, you know, a 2020 lens, and just seeing in movies, the internal affairs is always the bad guy, right? When it comes to cop movies,
right?
You know, and they're the ones that are really the good guys. You know, they're the ones that are spotting these fucking bad cops. But all of our lives, it's always been IA, man. Fuck you guys, you know?
Yeah, like Lethal Weapon 3, man.
Right. And that's interesting, you know, to look at it through that lens where, you know, cops are fucking terrible and they do a lot of horrible things. And seeing that from this perspective, I thought was pretty unique. And so I just really enjoy it. Sorry, that was a long answer, but I have Insomnia as number 4 on my list.
Yeah, that's fine. I would say the top 6 of my list, I would consider good to great movies. Like I would watch any of these 6 movies if they were on cable or streaming or something like that. I too really enjoy Insomnia. I just think I like the other 5 a little bit better.
Got it. Randy, where did you rank it?
Haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. It's good. It's on HBO Max. Well, it was. I don't know if it still is, but
I think all the Nolan movies are on HBO Max.
Oh, yeah. It's a Warner Brothers thing. Dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if Oppenheimer is a Warner Brothers movie. It might not be.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers basically gives him like a blank check and like, hey, make a movie you want to make.
Might have to look into that one. I think that might be one of his first ones in a long time that's not Warner Brothers.
That would be very interesting. Number 5 on my list is The Prestige. I love me some Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I have The Prestige as number 5 on my list.
I also have The Prestige as number 5 on my list.
Whoa, yeah. we're like a Hollywood telephone, 555.
It's a good one. It's a fun period piece, too. And a lot of 2/3, 66% of this podcast is not a fan of the period pieces. And that one's a lot of fun. It's got magic.
It does. And science.
And the clones. Whole the twist was kind of interesting there at the end. I was like, what? All right. Yeah. I'm here for it.
Yeah, my number four Christopher Nolan film is Inception.
That's a decent movie. I have Inception as number three.
Oh, nice.
I have Inception as number two.
Ooh.
It's a good one. Good, it's a thinker.
It's spattering. It is, and it leaves you guessing at the end. Although yeah. Someone said recently there was like a Michael Caine interview. It might not have been recently. I just heard about it recently, to where Christopher Nolan told Michael Caine that anytime he appears on screen, it's the real world.
Right.
And I guess I missed the memo in the first like four times I watched that movie. Right. That makes sense, though, I guess.
Right.
Number three on my list is Batman Begins. I remember just being so shocked when I saw that movie. And I'm like, whoa, that's a fucking Batman movie. Love seeing the origin. Love seeing, you know, a different take on things. You know, it was after Batman and Robin. And so we'd kind of gone this direction. And Chris Nolan's like, let's go a different route. He took right. a whole nother avenue. They didn't brand X. But yeah, Batman Begins. I remember walking out of the theater being like, yeah, it's a fucking movie.
That's what number for you?
Three.
Okay. I have Batman Begins, I have as number two.
Okay.
I have Batman Begins at number three as well.
Whoa, look at us. Syncing up. It's like our Menzies. Number two, I have Memento. You know, really, I think most people's first introduction to Christopher Nolan. I think it's arguably his best. I think that the craft is on display, especially for someone who this is really their first major feature film. So it's very, very impressive. And I think Guy Pearce just knocks it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. So I actually have Memento as seven on my list, only because I saw it when it came out, and that was it. So just based on all the movies that are on this list, I've seen minus Tenet. I have seen multiple times, several times. Memento, I've only seen once, and I remember it, you know, but I couldn't tell you what made it unique other than just the short-term memory loss and, you know, the ending. Basically going backwards, you know, his tattoos telling the story, or the writing on his body, rather. You know, John G., Christ, I'm a John G., and it's just basically... I'm feeling so bad for this man. But then, you know, it has like this Total Recall moment where you're just like, okay, so he's just reliving this adventure over and over and over and over and over again. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. So I have that seven on my list.
Okay. Randy?
I've never seen it, believe it or not.
But I bet everyone at your school tells about how great it is.
Yeah, that is one of those film school kind of movies.
You'll probably hate it then, just because you've been hearing about it all the time. You're like, fuck this movie.
Yeah, that happens a few times.
Yeah, and I think we'll all sync up with number one being The Dark Knight.
Yes.
That is correct for me as well, yes.
It's a pretty good film, you know. I was talking to someone the other day about it being a little bit long to where they could have cut out all that Harvey Dent shit at the end. I remember leaving the theater with a very bad taste in my mouth about how they ended it with Batman being the bad guy, to where I thought they could have easily made it like the Joker did it. And I get that's not the story Nolan was trying to tell, but yeah, I think a lot of the reasons I don't like The Dark Knight Rises is because it takes so long for The Dark Knight to rise. And a lot of that is the fallout from what happens at the end of Dark Knight. So I feel like The Dark Knight, while my favorite Christopher Nolan movie, really, really hampered and put Baby in a corner with The Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm. Especially if I feel like it's a missed opportunity. I mean, this is obviously Monday morning quarterbacking, but it would have been really cool if both villains didn't fucking die at the end of the movie. And we got to see them come back in some capacity. You know, like it is fun seeing Scarecrow on screen in three of these movies, whether you like Scarecrow or not. It's pretty cool that, you know, having a rogues gallery and it's like, fuck, it's Tuesday night and I got to deal with fucking Scarecrow again. I think that's kind of funny. So
it makes you really think that if Heath Ledger hadn't unfortunately passed away, would the Joker have been that judge role in the third one?
Yeah, it could have been interesting.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I agree. I think that You should. The movie could have ended with them not knowing the whereabouts of Harvey Dent, and then him obviously taking on the persona of Two-Face. We got to see a nugget of that, but it would have been really cool to see his, you know, carnage in the next movie. I mean, I get that they wanted to do the whole Bane thing, but it's cool and all, and it had the parallels to like the We Are the 99% and all that stuff. The
Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, you know, there's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne. I get it, but I mean that movement went nowhere, so it's wasted.
Yeah, Harvey Dent. Can we trust him?
Right. We did get that. but whatever. It is what it is. I mean, as a 90s teen that got to read Nightfall, as it was coming out, I remember being really sad when Batman's back got broken. And it was a really cool 19 issues, and it was really neat to see, you know, Batman 500, and it have this new costume and a new guy in the cat and cowl, or the cat and cowl and the cape and cowl, and it was really fucking cool. Like, I love that whole storyline, but to see it sort of, you know, re-envisioned in what we got, you know, it's completely different. Yes, Batman's back is broken. Yes, there is a Bane, but that is it.
Right. Yeah, Azrael from Nightfall, he's probably one of the most like polarizing like figures in comics. Like, some people just love him, like Azrael Sinclair or whatever. And then other people are like, he's like the worst thing that ever happened in comics. Yeah.
Jean-Paul Valley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was cool but again, I was 14, right? So I thought I knew Batman was going to come back. I knew Bruce was going to be okay, but I liked how, you know, eventually he got soft. He was worn out. And then this other guy shows, you know, I could be a different Batman, you know. I thought that was kind of neat, and even Robin was kind of scared. I was like, "Whoa, this guy's fucking crazy." And Tim Drake, that is. Eventually, I think it was Dick Grayson that ended up beating the shit out of him, but it's all good.
Yeah, and I like Bane in The Dark Knight Rises. I think they did a good job of portraying him. You know, obviously, we got the Batman and Robin version where he was like a total brainless idiot, but in Nightfall, he's a pretty smart guy. He figures out who Bruce Wayne is. He empties Arkham so that Bruce Wayne is just exhausted and has no fight left in him, and then he just shows up at Wayne Manor and is like, "Hey, Mr. Wayne, I'm gonna fuck you up,"
right?
And then drags him out to the middle of the city and on the rooftop so everyone can see, and just fucking breaks him in two.
Yeah,
cool. And now everyone just does the little crab face voice.
Yeah, yeah, like you merely adopted the darkness or whatever. I was born in it. Yeah. Will does a good one.
Yeah.
Will Ray. Yeah, he does a really good one.
But yeah, and I think that both Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises, they have that great like intro, little almost like a mini movie. You know, both of them were like shot in IMAX, and they showed them off early when you saw other movies from Warner Brothers. But yeah, I think the plane scene in Dark Knight Rises, and of course the robbery scene, the bank scene in The Dark Knight, are both pretty good.
Yes. And the plane scene is incredible, like just how it was shot, and even the heist where Joker gets arrested in the Dark Knight is really cool too. How they make the truck do a complete like flip onto its back, I think that's pretty badass. As people that have made bombs in the desert and thought that was cool, seeing a truck flip is pretty badass on a technical level.
Yeah, and the Joker's so sad because he's got him. He's going to win, yeah. And then all of a sudden Gordon comes out of nowhere, and you can see in his eyes, like, "Oh, come on, I almost had him."
Yeah, he's like, "Just give me 1 minute.
Can you come back in like 30 seconds?
Yeah, almost like, you can arrest me, but let me just do this first, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's funny. When Commissioner Gordon's got it back to his kid, he's like, "Did Batman save you?" He's like, "Actually, this time I saved him."
Yeah. Have you seen those YouTube videos where it's like, it's like watching Batman like take forever to run away or something like that.
No.
And so it's like edited in a way where they see Batman leaving. So he's trying to flee really fast, but like it cuts to Gordon looking up at the fire escape, and he just sees Batman like scurrying off to be all fast. It's really funny. I don't even know how it ended up being showing up on a playlist. I was watching dumb videos and it just popped up. I don't even know what to look for, but it's something like Batman exiting or something like that.
Yeah, I'll look for it. That sounds funny.
It's pretty hysterical. in a Harvey Dent, can he be trusted kind of way. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, all those Batman sketches are the best.
Yeah, they're pretty funny shit, dude.
Like the Riddler one, where he's like, "Is it a helicopter?" And then yeah. He calls Alfred. He's like, "Here's the riddle, blah blah." That's what I said. I think he's just too embarrassed that I got it so quickly.
Yeah, that's funny. And when he kills the guy, he's like, "Poor little guy." Or he's like, "Cute little guy."
I'll take it out.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, that's anyway. Oswald.
Yeah. He was a penguin. Yeah. Funny stuff. Well, cool. I think we were all pretty close, minus Memento. Mine was completely opposite of yours, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
And then Randy.
A long time. Maybe
apparently, I'm the only one that kind of likes Tenet.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you're alone. I know a couple of my friends really enjoy it. So I just, I think Josh kind of likes it. Zach really likes it. So maybe we just don't get it. Maybe we're just terrible.
I don't think there's anything. What's there not to get?
I don't know. Apparently, it's really cool.
I'm sure. I mean, to be fair though, it is. Seeing Tenet gives me, before I even saw the frame of the Batman, seeing him in Tenet, I was like, yeah, he can be Batman.
Oh, sure. The talent was great. Like, I really like everyone that's on screen. I just don't like the movie.
Yeah.
Even the tall girl, the nice lady that's in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I forget her name. I feel bad about it. But she's awesome. And I love how she's just so fucking tall. And everyone next to her just... is the itty bitty. And yeah. I like Kenneth Branagh. I think he's great.
Playing such an evil dick. Like, yeah. I'm not used to that from Mr. Branagh.
Yeah. He's a cool dude. Yeah. I mean, everything, the talent was awesome. I think the story was just kind of weird and overly complicated.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I was duped in any way. I don't feel like I was insulted by how difficult it was to follow. It's just, I find it interesting if they're going to have conversations about explaining what is going on and then they choose to just make the conversation inaudible to where you have no idea what the fuck they're saying. That's right. Just kind of weird.
Time inversion is stupid.
Yeah, I think all time travel stuff is always, unless it's Back to the Future or Terminator 2, then it's always kind of weird. I'm always on the fence. I think that it's good to have rules. But I don't think that the rules need to ruin the movie, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I think that, there's the two schools of thought that, time is fixed and you going back in time, you can't change anything because in the timeline, you always went back and you either didn't succeed or you succeeded in a way you didn't expect. And this is how the timeline plays out. Or, the Back to the Future of it all, to where you create these alternate timelines. In which case, if you went back in time and created an alternate timeline, Randy and my life would not be altered at all. We would still be living in the time frame, but the time frame we live in, you traveled back in time and maybe you never came back, or maybe you came back to, maybe you, when you created this new branch timeline, you are now attached to that timeline. So like you just no longer exist on our timeline, which would be sad. I hope that never happens.
That is sad, but that makes way more sense to me than your world as you know it crumbling all around you and you have no, it just all of a sudden ceases to be. I just know that if I was born in June 30th, 1980, and I live my life to 2021, and then I hop into a time machine and I end up in 1855, and then I get killed in 1855, my tombstone can say, born June 30th, 1980, died 1855, and I'm okay with that. My 1855 is my future, not my past. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Me, that makes perfect sense.
You were negative 135 years.
Yes.
You look like a day over negative 114.
I just know that if you were to look in the annals of history, it would say, Justin, you get to 1855 and you say, whoa, look at this guy. He was born in 1980. How did he die in 1855? You're like, well, funny story. You have to do a time machine. Easy peasy. My future is set in 1855. And I'm okay with that. I can live by those rules.
Right. And those are really, I mean, the only two rules that you can actually tell a narrative story with, and they make sense, I think. Mm-hmm. But of course, a time travel story in which you can't affect the future, it does not make a very interesting story.
Right. Therein lies the problem.
Right.
The suits would be like, nah, see? How can we make it better?
But in practice, I think that is the time travel theory I most believe in that if you went back in time to bet on the Braves winning the World Series this year, when you went back in time, you would successfully bet on the Braves, but at some point in between you betting and the Braves winning the World Series, you lost a ticket, and that's why in today's day, you don't have that money from the Braves.
Oh.
You can't affect your future. It's predestined. Mm.
There are fixed points in time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. What if rather than go back to bet on the series, I went forward to see who won the 2022 series and then came back to my time and bet? I could do that.
But you're not affected.
I'm not changing the past. I am effectively betting on the future.
Right, but you're not. That's the thing. You're not affecting your past. You're affecting your future self's past. But your future self's past was always altered by your past.
So do I win the money or not? If I go
forward? Sure, why not?
Okay. Yeah. So I go forward. Fuck going back. It's already happened. Who gives a shit? Go to the forward. Always go forward. Never go back. Fuck that. You'll be a witch.
Go forward. You don't have to wait for the movies to come out.
Yeah, yeah, always go forward.
Go forward a couple years. You got new Star Wars movies, new Marvel movies.
You don't want to live in the past. That's bad news bears. Always go forward.
Yeah.
Unless you just are an 80s kid and you want to just get all them toys again on fully stocked shelves in a Target and Toys R Us and pay $3 for your G.I. Joes, go for it.
And then, like, hide them in a storage facility and then pick them up 30 years later.
There you go. Perfect. Well, cool.
Like, I need to pay for 41 years of storage fees.
Yeah. How about I just give you a $500 right now and you just let me keep this thing forever? How about we do that? Some punk kid. He'll take the money. I assure you. Anyway, that's all I got. Randy, you got anything else?
Not a goddamn.
Dave, you got anything else?
Nope, I think I have talked enough.
Are you sure? You always have one more thing.
Nope, I added my one more thing in the middle of the show when I gave you a bonus list.
That's true. I appreciate that. The most shocking deaths, is that what it was?
There's the most shocking deaths in, most shocking deaths in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for listening to another fun and festive episode. This is 364 if you're keeping score. Be sure to check out our other podcasts. Of course, there is the Don't Be Crazy podcast, which this week we just recorded an episode on Moneyball in the spirit of the World Series. And it was a lot of fun. I love talking about that movie. I love baseball. I love it when people know more about baseball, which is basically everybody. And I learn something new every day. So check that one out. And then you also have the Escape Pod, where we're rewatching Star Trek The Next Generation. We are on Season 2, Episode 4, and it was a doozy, especially if you like them space cats. Those boys out there trying to spread their seed all over space, and it's dicey, not gonna lie. And it's right up Randy's alley. And it's a lot of fun, so check it out. And you keep rocking and rolling, stay safe, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you so much.